Well, last week was 4th of July, so 2 weeks ago, we were talking about the Siege of Jericho. And as you recall, we talked about quite a bit of the content of chapter 6 of the book of Joshua. We talked about this bizarre battle plan that God drew up. You know, we're going to walk around the city blowing trumpets one time a day for 6 days. And then the seventh day, we're going to do it 7 times. And then we're going to shout, for God has given us the city. So remember that a couple of things here, I guess. First of all, when did they shout? Before or after the walls fell? So they shouted in victory because God had given them the city before there was a manifestation of getting the city. Okay? So they shouted in faith. Would that we would shout in faith some. Would that we would believe that God has given us something before we see it with our eyes and touch it with our hands. So in response to their shout of faith and the blast of the shofar, the walls of the city fall. But the battle wasn't over. The thing that isolated Jericho from the children of Israel was now out of the way. In fact, if you would look at some of the archaeological work that's been done, the walls actually collapsed in such a way as to form a ramp to allow the Israelites to charge into the city. And as we look there at the end of chapter 6, we find that basically, you know, when the walls fell, each man was to go straight in from wherever he was. Apparently they had the whole city surrounded, charge straight in, and complete taking possession of Jericho. Now, up to this point, the Israelites had not possessed any of the land of the promise save that cave that Abraham had bought to bury his wife. That's the only part of the promised land that any Israelite owned. So, as we talked about in the last session, Jericho was going to be the first fruits of the promised land. It was going to be the very first thing that they took possession of. And the first fruits of any increase, according to the old covenant law, belongs to God. God gave them very special instructions regarding Jericho. Aside from Rahab and all those who were with her in the house, which were held safe, every living thing in Jericho was to die. All of the gold and silver and bronze was to be taken into the treasury of the house of the Lord, and everything else was to be destroyed. If that pretty trinket's laying there on the floor, don't pick it up. If there's some good tools over there by the wall, leave them set there. Jericho belonged to God as first fruits. Okay? Why did he want to totally destroy those people? It was a judgment. Okay? We can't look at Israel possessing the land in the absence of God judging the unbelieving people who were already in possession of the land. This is a twofold thing. Israel gets its blessing of the promised land, but the time was ripe for judgment on the people who already dwelt in the land. So this is a twofold thing. Israel possesses it in faith, and they become the instrument of God's judgment on the unbelievers that were in the land. One presupposes that God had made himself available to those people and they had rejected him.
You know, one place it says that the land actually vomited them out.
It does say that the land vomits them out because of their unbelief. Okay? So, in our modern sensibilities, you don't make war on women and children and farm animals. It was a different time and a different place and a different purpose. So a lot of people get all torn up and they talk about what a bloodthirsty God there was in the Old Testament. He gave all of us, if you read Romans, he made adequate revelation of himself to all mankind to recognize that there was a God. Most of mankind chose to create idols and religious systems or to worship themselves instead of recognizing that there was a God and that that God had a claim on them as a creator. Sadly, that attitude still exists today. Sadly, it's often masked by some of the most brilliant people on this planet, those in science and government and other powerful places, who cannot conceive of the simplicity that there was an intelligent mind that created this planet that we live on. They would have us believe that it all happened by just happenstance. And I'll tell you this, it takes more faith to believe that when you look at the complexity of creation, the interaction between species, the interaction of exactly how the earth spins and how the tides move and how the winds blow and how that distributes heat. If you look at the science behind it and you're going to ask me to believe it just happened, that takes way more faith than me believing in God, because it's just too complex to have happened by accident. I digress from Joshua and the taking of the promised land. But the thing here is, look, we've got to understand that God had a purpose for these actions. There's one thing that God did say when he was telling them about I'm going to come to that in just a minute. Let me move on here. Joshua sends the two spies to go find Rahab and bring out all that were with her and her household because of her faith, because she sent the spies, because she did what she was told to do. She gathered her precious ones together in her house and stayed in her house while the wall was falling down around them with a red cord out the window. So he sends and retrieves them, and other than that, Israel goes in and basically massacres Jericho, takes possession of the valuables, and burns everything else, theoretically. We find that not everybody obeyed the instructions. I want to direct your attention, though, to the very end of chapter 6, starting at verse 26. At that time, Joshua pronounced this solemn oath: "Cursed before the Lord is the one who undertakes to rebuild the city Jericho. At the cost of his firstborn son, he will lay its foundations. At the cost of his youngest, he will set up its gates." So the Lord was with Joshua, and his fame spread throughout the land. What do you suppose happened with that curse? It was carried out. 1 Kings, chapter 16, verse 34. In Ahab's time, Hiel of Bethel rebuilt Jericho. He laid its foundations at the cost of his firstborn son, Abiram, and he set up its gates at the cost of his youngest son, Segub, in accordance with the word of the Lord spoken by Joshua, the son of Nun. God's blessings and curses are powerful, and they will be fulfilled. It would do us well to know what's blessed and what's cursed. So what happens? They've taken the city. Can you imagine the high the Israelites were on? Here we are, we've been wandering around in the desert for 40 years. We obey God, we have this miracle, we cross the river in flood stage on dry ground. We get circumcised. We celebrate Passover. And there's this huge walled city with professional soldiers. And we just wiped it out. Wow! Party at camp tonight! You know. And it would have been good. Except. We look at chapter 7. But the Israelites were unfaithful in regard to the devoted things. Remember, in this context, devoted means irrevocably given over to God. God owned Jericho. All the stuff was his. Supposed to be given to him or destroyed in accordance with his instructions. Achan, son of Carmi, the son of Zimri, the son of Zerah of the tribe of Judah, took some of them. So the Lord's anger burned against Israel. Now Joshua sent men from Jericho to Ai, which is near Beth-Aven to the east of Bethel, and told them, go and spy out that region. So the men went up and spied out Ai. I mean, what do you do? You just took a city? Go see what's next door, right? When they returned to Joshua, they said, not all the army we have will have to go up against Ai. Send only 2,000 or 3,000 men to take it, and do not weary the whole army, for only a few people live there. Sounds smart, I guess. So about 3,000 went up, but they were routed by the men of Ai, who killed about 36 of them. They chased the Israelites from the city gate as far as the stone quarries and struck them down on the slopes. At this, the hearts of the people melted in fear and became like water. How can this happen? We just did this great thing. You know, we just conquered Lexington, and the community of Viper just kicked our tails and ran us off. They haven't figured that one out yet. Okay, I will propose to you a couple of things here. Where did they get their battle plan for Jericho? Where did they get their battle plan for Ai? The men made it. And not even Joshua. The people he sent, hey, Jeremy, go spy it out for me, and whatever you think we ought to do, we'll do. There's a problem. If God gave you a successful battle plan to utterly destroy a major city, doesn't it seem sensible that you'd ask him what I ought to do next? I submit to you that we do the same thing all the time. You know, we'll come off a big spiritual battle, and we'll make what seems like a seemingly insignificant decision a day or two later, and it will beat us senseless. We spent all that time asking God how to do this big thing, but we didn't think to ask God how to do this little thing. Is he still God?
Yes.
Whether it's big or whether it's little, whether it's important or whether it's trivial. The little foxes spoil the vines. You know, if you have a wood frame building, some insects about that big can put it on the ground. They're called termites. It doesn't take a big thing. You know, we all know how big the Titanic was, right? Well, it was a pretty good sized chunk of ice, but the actual holes that sank that ship, not very big at all. But they were in the right place. But you see, you know, it doesn't necessarily take that big thing to defeat us. That little thing did. And what happens here is, you know, the first mistake is Israel doesn't seek God's face before they make their own plans. They come off their spiritual high, off their big success, and they go try to do something on their own, and it doesn't work very well. But what they don't know is there's something else behind it. Now, let's see what happens. They come back. We've been defeated. We've lost some guys. You get the impression that they didn't lose anybody at Jericho. It doesn't say that they did. And now they're all tore up, over 36 guys getting killed here. Apparently, they took the city of Jericho without casualties. Amazing. Unless you believe God was behind it. When they returned to Then Joshua tore his clothes and fell face down to the ground before the ark of the Lord, remaining there till evening. The elders of Israel did the same and sprinkled dust on their heads. What are they doing? You're in mourning. You know, you don't care about your personal appearance. You put dust or ashes on your head. You tear your clothes. I'm not going to go there. But the bottom line is, look, I care so much about this torment I'm in, I don't care how I look. And Joshua said, "Alas, sovereign Lord, why did you ever bring this people across the Jordan to deliver us into the hands of the Amorites to destroy us? If only we'd been content to stay on the other side of the Jordan. Pardon your servant, Lord. What can I say now that Israel has been routed by its enemies?" Joshua, man of God. God is exalted in Joshua coming across the river, taking the city of Jericho. One thing goes wrong, and Joshua falls apart. Oh God, why did we cross the river? A couple of days ago, he wasn't saying, "Oh God, why did we cross the river?" Don't we do the same thing? We have a victory, and then we trip, and the first thing we want to do is crawl under a rock and hide and quit. Pull a blanket over our head. Go back to where it was safe. Oh, Moses, why did you bring us out here in the wilderness to starve? We had onions and leeks in Egypt. Because you were enslaved and God said to bring you out. Why did I ever start down this road? It's miserable. It hurts. I got bruises. I've stepped on thorns. I've got scrapes and cuts, and I'm hungry and I'm tired. I might as well quit. How human we all are. And apparently Joshua was too. So, what does God say? "Well, Josh, you're right. Load everybody up, cross the river. We'll go over here and hide a while. Let's wait another 40 years. Is that what he did? Nope. Remember what happened some years later when a prophet of God ran because of the words of a woman? Elijah, straight from Mount Carmel, straight from slaying hundreds of false prophets, straight from running ahead of a horse and chariot down the mountain to the city, gets, "My gods are going to kill you for what you did to my prophets." He just proved that her gods were powerless. Just proved that her prophets were powerless. But what does Joshua do? Not Joshua. What does Elijah do? He puts on his sandals and ties his robe up and he runs for days and days and days and hides in a cave. And when he finally slows down enough to listen, what does God say? What are you doing here? You're not all by yourself. You're not alone. I got stuff for you to do. Get up and dust yourself off. I got an appointment for you to see this guy and this guy and that guy. Go. And anoint your successor. Yeah, that's a pretty good word. He kind of does the same thing here with Joshua here. The Canaanite has a, what can I say now that Israel's been routed by our enemies, the Canaanites and all the other people of the country will hear about this and they'll surround us and wipe us out, our name from the earth, and what will you do for your own great name? Boo-hoo. Then the Lord said to Joshua, stand up, what are you doing on your face? Pick yourself up, boy. What are you quitting for? The fight ain't over. Huh? Sounds like a daddy there, doesn't he? Stand up, what are you doing down on your face? Israel has sinned. They violated my covenant, which I commanded them to keep. They've taken some of the devoted things. They have stolen. They have lied. They have put them with their own possessions. This is why the Israelites cannot stand against their enemies. They turn their backs and run because they've been made liable to destruction. I will not be with you anymore unless you destroy whatever among you is devoted to destruction. Josh, I gave you guys a rule. Nobody takes any of the spoils from Jericho. Somebody did. Hey, Commander, you didn't ask. You didn't check. What God doesn't say is maybe if you had asked me for the battle plan for Ai before you went to Ai, I would have said there's something there you need to take care of, Josh, before you go. There's something evil been brought into the camp and it's going to cause destruction. You need to fix it. And just maybe this wouldn't happen. Learn from this. So, you know, Joshua's got to be sitting there saying, how do I figure it out? All these people, all these families, all these tribes. How do I figure out who's got the stuff? And what if they lie to me and tell me they don't have it? Well, God gives him a plan. Early in the morning, present yourselves tribe by tribe. Parade. Okay. The tribe the Lord chooses shall come forward clan by clan. I'll tell you which tribe it is, Josh. I'll tell you which clan in the tribe it is. And have them come forth family by family, and the family the Lord chooses shall come forward man by man. Whoever is caught with the devoted thing shall be destroyed by fire along with all that belongs to him. He has violated the covenant of the Lord and done an outrageous thing in Israel. Who'd he steal from? That stuff was devoted to God. Not only was it that theft that was the problem, it was the seed of that theft. Because if you get away with it once, you're going to try it again. And if Ray sees that I get away with it, he just might try it. And next week, if I've got away with it and Ray's got away with it, Hilda and Alvy are going to take some stuff home. We're going to, you know, we have a complete breakdown of respect for God's orders. This is why the modern church today has lost a lot of credibility. We have failed to enforce dun, 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 church discipline when necessary. What? The power is gone and we are defeated before our enemies because we have allowed the cursed thing to come into the camp. and not done anything about it. Now, this is not popular. We live in a society that we want to love and embrace everybody, that we want to give people plenty of time to get over their issues. And there's a place for that. The goal of everything the church does is restoration. If someone is in sin, we want to bring them home. But if we enable them to continue in their sin and be part of the body of believers, then the body of believers loses power and credibility. The leadership loses credibility. And God loses credibility. Because it's His rules, it's not ours. So this is why a very unpopular thing needs to return to the church. And that is godly, Spirit-led spiritual discipline. And I know that doesn't taste very good, but it's the Bible. Okay. So let's go on here. So he describes what needs to be done. In verse 16, it starts off, and he starts bringing him forward, and God chooses the tribe of Judah. And then he chooses the clan of the Zerahites. And then he has the clan come forward, and he chooses the family of Zimri. Joshua had his family come forward man by man, and Achan, son of Carmi, the son of Zimri, the son of Zerah, of the tribe of Judah, was chosen. God said, "It's him." Then Joshua said to Achan, "My son, give glory to the Lord, the God of Israel, and honor to him. Tell me what you have done. Do not hide it from me." Isn't that what we want to do? But you know, you wonder from Achan's standpoint, did somebody tell on me, or is this really God really picked me out of here? But I think he had to know. He had to know that God had put the finger on him. There's a proverb that says, God, the eyes of the Lord are everywhere, keeping watch over the wicked and the good. Is it Isaiah that says, "Where can I go to hide from you?" Or is that one of the Psalms? I can't recall now. There's also scripture, you know, there's no place I can go to hide from you. Your eyes are ever on me. Achan replied, "It is true. I have sinned against the Lord, the God of Israel. This is what I have done. When I saw in the plunder a beautiful robe from Babylonia, 200 shekels of silver and a bar of gold weighing 50 shekels, I coveted them and took them. They're hidden in the ground inside my tent with the silver underneath." So Joshua sent messengers, and they ran to the tent, and there it was, hidden in his tent with the silver underneath. They took the things from the tent, brought them to Joshua and all the Israelites, and spread them out before the Lord. Then Joshua, together with all Israel, took Achan the son of Zerah, the silver, the robe, the gold bar, his sons and daughters, his cattle, donkeys and sheep, his tent and all that he had, into the valley of Achor. Joshua said, "Why have you brought this trouble on us? The Lord will bring trouble on you today." Then all Israel stoned him, and after they had stoned the rest, they burned them. Over Achan they heaped a large pile of rocks, which remains to this day. Then the Lord turned from his fierce anger. Therefore the place has been called the Valley of Achor ever since. You know what Achor means? Trouble. This sounds incredibly harsh, doesn't it? Let's think about what Achan's greed did. Well, it brought dishonor to God. It brought dishonor to God's chosen leader and God's chosen people. It caused 36 soldiers of Israel to be slain. and it removed God's favor from all they did until it was cleaned up. Was the price equal to the damage that was done? So here's what we don't want to think about in the modern church. When you're in the body and you harbor sin, it doesn't only affect you. It affects those closest to you, as it did Achan and his family. It affects those who are related to you. It affects the community that you walk in. Paul Simon, a nice Jewish boy who was a singer, wrote a song in the 60s, said, "I am a rock, I am an island." He was wrong. The English poet John Donne said it much more closely to accurate. No man is an island unto himself. What I do affects you because we have a relationship. What you do affects me because we have a relationship. What we do as the church affects the church as a whole, the God whom we worship, the community that our church is in. We don't take things seriously enough. I'm certainly not a hellfire and damnation preacher.
I had an arm infection last week. It didn't affect just my arm. It affected my whole body.
And probably everybody around you, because you weren't your normal self. And sin is an infection. It's more like a cancer, because it's destructive. And it grows and it breeds. And it turns, you know, one of the insidious things about cancer is it's the body turning on itself. It's not an outside invader. It's a corrupt cell that's supposed to be there, but it got corrupted, and then it starts breeding, and it starts destroying those things around. That's what sin in the body does. It's a cancer. And all the other systems in the body are trying to fight it. So you've got the body fighting against the body, and part of the body trying to destroy the body. And the church is the body of Christ. So a cancerous sin in the body of the church. You see the parallels everywhere? Doesn't it all just kind of run together? And as much as we want to celebrate Jericho, we need to recognize and respect Ai. I don't want to leave the story here, but Floyd, you had a comment?
It was something that I read last night. It was out of the book of the Harbinger. And it talked about how, when back around 9/11, how this guy was talking to the prophet, and he was saying that we went and sinned against God by not obeying his rules, you know. And then he was saying that our the calamity of our whole system is going to, you know, and it's like this in Jericho, you know, the children of Israel.
Well, Israel was a nation, right? And one family in the nation harbored sin, and it brought defeat to the nation's army. God deals with us personally as individuals, but he deals with us corporately as his body. He deals with nations corporately. You know, in the world of business, there's a thing called a legal entity. You, Zita, as a person, are a legal entity. New Hope Church Incorporated as a corporation is a legal entity. The state, the Commonwealth of Kentucky, is a legal entity. Okay, the United States is a legal entity. An entity is, in the eyes of the law, a person. Okay? So God deals with people, but he also deals with families and tribes and clans and nations. So the same principles apply. Okay? I'll get really derailed if I chase that any farther. I want to see what happens here. Let's see what happens in chapter 8. Now, Israel went off on its own. It attacked Ai with a small force, got beat. God revealed that there was sin in the camp. The sin was judged. It's a new day. Then the Lord said to Joshua, "Do not be afraid and do not be discouraged." Those of you who were here for the prayer meeting, become against the spirit of discouragement. Okay? "Take the whole army with you and go back up and attack Ai, for I have delivered into your hands the king of Ai, his people, his city, and his land. You shall do to Ai and its king as you did to Jericho and its king, except that you may carry off their plunder and livestock for yourselves. Set an ambush behind the city." Different battle plan. We're not going to march around, set an ambush. What's an ambush? You go hide behind the tree and wait for them to come by. Yeah. Okay. So Joshua and the whole army moved out to attack Ai. He chose 30,000 of his best fighting men and sent them out at night with these orders. "Listen carefully. You're to set an ambush behind the city. Don't go very far from it. All of you be on alert. I and all those with me will advance on the city. And when the men come out against us as they did before, we'll flee from them. They will pursue us until we've lured them away from the city. For they will say they're running away from us just as they did before. So as we flee from them, you're to rise up from ambush and take the city. The Lord your God will give it into your hand. When you've taken the city, set it on fire. Do what the Lord has commanded. See to it you have my orders." Get the picture. Here's the city. Y'all go lie in ambush back here. We're going to approach the city from the front. They're going to come out and do battle. We're going to give ground. We're going to turn around and run. When they start chasing us, they're going to leave the city unguarded. Slip in behind, take the city, set it on fire. Okay? What's the army of Ai going to do? Oh my gosh, they've got the city. They're going to turn around and run back right into the arms of that army with Joshua and his troops right behind them. They're caught in the pincers. And, you know, from a tactician's standpoint, it's, you know, if they teach you tactics in the army, they'll teach you that one early on. Yeah, the army of Ai had nothing there. So this is you know, God's battle plan for Ai. And it played on, look what it did. It used the disaster from a couple of days before as the bait for the trap. Israel comes in with about 3,000 guys. They get chased off. Look, hey, they're doing it again. We'll do the same thing to them. Then they turn around and look behind them and say, uh-oh. Okay. Then Joshua sent them off, and they went to the place of ambush and lay in wait between Bethel and Ai to the west of Ai. But Joshua spent the night with the people. Early the next morning, Joshua mustered his army, and he and the leaders of Israel marched before them to Ai. The entire force that was with him marched up and approached the city and arrived in front of it. They set up camp in north of Ai with the valley between them and the city, and Joshua had taken about 5,000 men and set them in ambush between Bethel and Ai. to the west of the city. So the soldiers took up their positions, the main camp to the north and the ambush to the west. And that night Joshua went into the valley. When the king of Ai saw this, he and all the men of the city hurried out early in the morning to meet Israel in battle at a certain place overlooking the Arabah. But he did not know that an ambush had been set against him behind the city. Joshua and all Israel let themselves be driven back before them and fled toward the wilderness, and all the men of Ai were called to pursue them. And they pursued Joshua and were lured away from the city. Not a man remained in Ai or Bethel who did not go after Israel. They left the city open and went in pursuit of Israel. Then the Lord said to Joshua, "Hold out toward Ai the javelin that's in your hand, for into your hand I will deliver the city." So Joshua held out toward the city the javelin that was in his hand. As soon as he did this, the men in ambush rose quickly from their position and rushed forward. They entered the city, captured it, and quickly set it on fire. Men of Ai looked back and saw the smoke of the city rising up into the sky, but they had no chance to escape in any direction. The Israelites, who had been fleeing toward the wilderness, had turned back against their pursuers. For when Joshua and all Israel saw that the ambush had taken the city, that smoke was going up from it, they turned around and attacked the men of Ai. Those in ambush also came out of the city against them, so that they were caught in the middle, and the Israelites on both sides. Israel cut them down, leaving them neither survivors nor fugitives. But they took the king of Ai alive and brought him to Joshua. When Israel finished killing all the men of Ai in the fields and in the wilderness where they had chased them, when every one of them had been put to the sword, all the Israelites returned to Ai and killed those who were in it. 12,000 fell that day, all the people of Ai. For Joshua did not draw back the hand that held out his javelin until he had destroyed all who lived in Ai. Wasn't that just a signal? Stretch out your javelin over the city. He held it stretched out until they actually had the city. Reminds you of a previous time when the battle was going well for Israel as long as Moses held his staff up. But as soon as his arms began to sag, they would lose. And they called Aaron and Hur to hold his arms up. Okay? You know. There's another time later on when prophet tells the king to shoot arrows, and he shoots what, two or three, just a few, and says, "Yeah, I'll give you the enemy's army as long as you do that." Well, he should have shot all of them, but he just shot a few. There's a saying, don't quit till the job's done. If God tells you to do something, you keep doing it until it's done. So Joshua had to do that here. So Joshua burned Ai and made it a permanent heap of ruins in a desolate place to this day. He impaled the body of the king of Ai on a pole and left it there until evening. At sunset, Joshua ordered them to take the body down and throw it at the entrance to the city. They raised a large pile of rocks over it, which remains to this day. We talked about possessing the land. The Battle of Jericho was one kind of a battle. God did the major work, and all Israel had to do was follow their instructions. First Battle of Ai was a disaster because the people did not go back and seek God's instructions, and they allowed sin to remain in the camp, which put them under a curse, and God removed his hand from them. So they did that on their own strength, their own plan, their own strength. After that sin was judged and dealt with, they took up God's plan and won another great victory. We're not done with the conquest of the promised land. I'm actually going to go into another teaching on this one next week. But here's one thing I want you to realize. Our promised land is not heaven. It is a victorious Christian life in this world. If we desire to possess it, we need to learn the principles of Joshua. Sometimes God will give us a detailed plan and he'll do the big work for us, and all we got to do is go in and mop it up. But we got to remember to do it His way. Give Him the credit. Give Him the glory. If He has said, don't touch something, don't touch it. Then we got to remember not to run off on our own with our own plan and our own strength and try to do something, because that's 99 chances out of 100 not going to be God's plan. It's going to be your plan. And if you do your plan and not God's plan, you're doing it in your strength. And I don't know about you, but I'm not near as strong as He is. If sin's found, you deal with it. And then you get God's next plan. And the battle of Ai, the second Ai, was completely different than Jericho was. It was done not with the mighty sweep and signature of the hand of God on it, but with a God-given, wise plan that the men executed. And it was held faithful as long as Joshua held the sign of the victory. So he held on to the victory until the victory was won. Different plans, different battles, still possess the land. So for us, we've got to learn that not everything will be done the same way. We may have had a battle last week and it worked great because God came through in a miraculous way. That may happen again. It may not happen again. The next battle may require God to give you instructions for you to walk out, like that battle of Ai was. God gave Joshua instructions. Israel had to execute those, didn't they? They had to set men in ambush. They had to pull off the faint and the flee. They had to do it, didn't they? But God told them what to do. Different tactics, same result. So we don't need to expect that every battle we face will be the same. We may face a battle and God solves it with a miracle. An out and out, clear cut, there's no way this can happen, but it just happened. It's a miracle. And the next battle may be a course of medical treatment or an operation. The next battle may be, well, maybe I need to take another job because I don't have enough cash. But if God gives you the instruction to do it, it's blessed. You walk it out. Don't do it in your own wisdom. Don't do it in your own plan. Let God tell you what to do. You know, we want to do second AI, not first AI. Okay? And we'll find out that we've looked at two cities. And they were obvious. Here's a fortified city. We're going to have to attack this militarily. And here's another city. Well, it looks kind of weak, and it didn't work when we tried to take it with our plan, but it did work when we took it with God's plan. But there are other dangers in the land. And what we'll read about, we're going to read next time about the building of a law, an altar, and a rededication. And then we're going to read about an attack from the enemy that wasn't expected, because it happens by way of deception. Hey, wasn't that other spirit, Zeta? We've read about discouragement and deception. Well, they're right here in Joshua. All right, be blessed. See y'all Sunday.